Welcome to the Sweetest and Toughest Job Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel, mama to three, and I'm talking with subject matter experts and other parents about all the sweet moments, but also deep diving into the tough topics surrounding pregnancy, postpartum, and parenting. Thank you so much for being here as we explore the sweetest and toughest job. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the podcast in what is the 50th episode of the show. I am ever so grateful that you're here. I am so thankful that you've been following along on this journey for any part of it, including today's episode. And I hope you've picked and choosed whichever episodes are pertinent to yourself and your life, maybe all of them, hopefully, and have found something helpful and useful because that is what this show is all about. Today on this 50th episode, I'm sharing my conversation with Dr. Orlina Carrick, and she trained originally as a pediatric doctor, but she's now a family health advocate, empowerment mentor. She's a pioneer, an author, an educator, and a mom to four, and she's helping families create healthy habits that they love so that they can feel fit and fabulous without having to think about it. I mean, how amazing does that sound, right? Oftentimes, I think as busy moms, we put ourselves last, and what suffers is our health and wellness. So in this episode, I'm talking to Dr. Orlina about creating healthy habits and systems to bring your health and wellness as a mom forward. We're also switching gears in the second part of the episode, and we're talking about picky eaters because this is a very popular topic. If you have a toddler or a young child that is having a hard time finishing their meals or eating any of the healthy foods that you're putting on their plate, we have a conversation about some strategies, ways you can maybe think about approaching mealtime and what you're putting on the plate, and hopefully some of the tips help. So without further ado, I want to share my conversation with Orlina. Thank you again for being here. Here's our chat. I'm joined by Orlina Carrick. Hi, Orlina.
Hello. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, thank you for being here. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your background and your family?
Okay. How long have you got? So I am from the UK, as you can probably tell from my accent, and I trained as a doctor and I trained in pediatrics in the UK, so working in a hospital. And then, oh my goodness, nearly 10 years ago, we moved to Spain. And at the time I had two kids who were one and two. And then I had two more children. I had twins, which was a little bit of a surprise.
Wow.
I know. So I had four children under the age of 4 and a half. So that stage of my life was a little bit hectic, as you can imagine.
Oh, to say the least, I'll bet, right?
Yeah, exactly. And regarding my career, to cut a long story short, I say I accidentally gave up my career because essentially I couldn't really work in the same capacity in Spain as I could in the UK. So I started doing stuff, I will say, online, which to begin with looked at picky eating because, hey, guess what? I had picky eaters, but it really tied in with my pediatric training, which, you know, is all about health, children's health. Of course it is. And really my desire to get my children to eat healthily. So picky eating sort of covers two ends. You know, there's the stress for the parents, but also there's that, but really and truly, we want to be teaching our kids healthy eating. And now I've kind of, what they say, pivoted so that I also focus on the mother, because I think the mother is an integral part of, and the father as well, but I sort of work more with mothers as well. But one of the most important things about teaching our children healthy eating is to demonstrate healthy eating. And so I work with the family units to create healthy habits, which is healthy lifestyle, which we'll get into in more detail. But it's about everyone doing it together so that everyone can lead a healthy life, because there are so many benefits of healthy eating and living, and also so that we can feel fit and fabulous. And I think that's really, you know, what matters to us in the everyday, is that we have energy to do things and we feel good and we don't feel grumpy and tired and exhausted all the time, so that we can feel fit and fabulous. And I like to focus on habits and systems so that we can do it all without having to think about it.
That sounds lovely. Because having to think about it as a busy mom, I think is part of the challenge, right? And you are super mom. I cannot imagine having twins, especially on the back end. Like, you know, you already have two really close together and then surprise, it's twins. So that must have been, I'm sure it's still busy.
It is still busy. My husband laughs. He blames me because twins run in my family and they run on the male side. So what happens is you hyperovulate because they're a boy and a girl. So it's not the sort that split, which is essentially, it is my fault, really. But my mother had twins and my grandmother had twins and there's some great aunt who had two sets of twins. So it clearly is my fault. So, yes, two for the price of one.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Well, let's talk a little bit about healthy habits and routines. So maybe you can just dive in and kind of explain what you mean when you say establishing habits and routines. Are you talking about, you know, getting your breakfast in every day, getting a walk in every day? If you could just expand.
Yeah, all of that. All of that. So, you know, the thing about habits is habits are that place where we do things automatically, where our brain just does something without thinking. So a prime example is brushing our teeth. You don't have to think about brushing your teeth. Well, you don't when you're an adult. My children clearly do. But when you're an adult, you just automatically brush your teeth in the morning and in the evening, and it comes automatically. And in fact, our bodies sort of feel a bit, you know, jittery. If you forget to brush your teeth before you go to work, you have that kind of feeling of, oh my goodness, I've forgotten to do something. Mm-hmm. And that is a habit. And really so much of what we do is habit. I mean, scientists will say something like 95% of what we do is habit. And I find it very difficult to put an actual percentage on it, but it is. Everything we do is automatic. And that includes the way we eat, the way we think, the way we exercise, just everything. Our entire day is habit. And so that is really the key to doing things without thinking. And the key to setting up habits is really to set up habits that align with you and your family. And it's about the right habits. A lot of people think that if you have really healthy habits, it's all about discipline. And that's actually incorrect. Discipline is that bit where we have to force ourselves to do something. We have to really be conscious about it and think about it. And you can use that in the short run, but you can't use that in the long run. So people who have healthy habits or productive habits or whatever kind of habits serve them, it's not that they are super disciplined. It's that they've set their life up in such a way that it just happens automatically without thinking about it. So let me give you an example of this. Here in Spain, our children go to school in the morning and in the afternoon. So at 2:30, I walk my children to school. And on Tuesday and Thursday, I go to the swimming pool and I do some swimming training. So I take my swimming stuff with me when I walk my children to school. And then I walk down to the swimming pool and do my swimming training and then collect them on the way back. So when does my swimming habit start? It actually starts when I leave home to walk my children to school. And clearly, I'm not going to not take my children to school. And there may be times in my week when I think, or on that day, oh my goodness, I don't really feel like going swimming today. But I've set it up in such a way that it's actually more difficult for me to not go swimming than it is for me to go swimming. And actually, I really enjoy swimming now. So I've sort of trained myself mentally and I know that I love swimming. But I'm not a superhuman person. It's just, that's the routine that I do. And I just do it without thinking. And in order to not do it, I have to really think hard about what else I'm going to do. So that's an example of how we just set our lives up. And there's so many different examples that you can give.
I love that. And I wrote somewhere or heard somewhere that there's a certain, I think if you do something for, is it 21 days or 19 days, something like that, you're establishing a habit. Is there any, do you know any science behind that?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And lots of people do quote, some people quote a month, 6 weeks. And I think the reality is that's probably an average. You can actually change your habits instantly. So you can see an example of this. For example, you know, if you go to the doctor and they say, for example, you're a smoker and they say, look, you know, you've got lung cancer and you need to stop smoking if you have any chance of survival. That's such an amazing sort of jolt to our consciousness that many people will just break that habit, i.e. form a new habit instantly, and they will just give up. So you can create new habits really quickly if you want to, but the reality is that most of us in our normal lives, it takes us a bit longer to do it. And yeah, I think the reality is a rule of thumb, about 6 weeks. It does obviously depend how often you do that habit. So if it's something that you're doing once or twice or three times a day, you're going to establish that habit much more quickly than if it's just once a week.
That makes total sense. And it's probably different for different people, I imagine, too, kind of like you're saying.
Yeah, and you know, and different kind of habits as well. It depends, you know, like right. If you really love a habit, then you're going to enjoy it. You're going to get into that habit much more quickly. If it's, you know, my children and, I don't know, tidying their bedroom habit, that's going to take several years as far as I know.
Right. I want to get to picky eaters, but I want to first talk a little bit more about moms and kind of establishing these healthy routines, because I think so often as busy moms or parents, really, we come last, right? We're so busy in our days, especially with young children, which is most of what my audience has. You're running around from here to there, getting their lunches, getting their breakfast, cleaning up the kitchen, getting off to wherever they need to go. Maybe you're getting yourself to work. So what are just some simple starting points that moms can kind of think about when they're trying to kind of set their path in a more healthy, on a healthy trajectory?
Yeah. And I think that's so true. And I think I was an example of this, and I, you know, laughingly say I gave up my career, and it's easy for me to look back now, but really and truly that time when I had four young children and had lost my identity. And I think this happens to so many mothers, that you get so used to looking after everybody, except you put yourself at the bottom of the pile. And that just doesn't work on two levels, partly because you aren't recharging your own batteries, and partly because you aren't demonstrating to your children really and truly how to look after yourself. And one of my favorite quotes is, the best thing you can give your kids is your own happiness. And I like to add, and the second best thing you can give your kids, best thing is vegetables. But really and truly, I do believe that once you start looking after yourself, everything just falls into place, because you have the energy to be the mother that you want to be. So for me, I found myself, like, it wasn't a total disaster. And if you sort of saw me, you wouldn't think, oh my goodness, she needs lots of help. But from internally, I could see that I was snapping a little bit more than I wanted to, you know, that battle to get the children into the bath, the battle to get them out of the bath. Now, I'm not saying life is perfect now, but I have the energy to sort it out now. Whereas back then, I was just so exhausted. And so I think my mindset was such a negative mindset that I just felt like I wasn't coping. And I think that this is sort of normal for most people, to be perfectly honest. And I think the first thing that mothers need to do is really acknowledge that and take that step to saying, do you know what? I can prioritize myself, and I can make some time and some space for myself. And it always feels like we don't have any time in the day and things are so busy. But actually, really and truly, when you step back and rearrange your life and look at all the four healthy pillars, and I'll tell you about the healthy pillars in a minute, but really and truly, when you do that, actually, it's like you wave a magic wand and you create time and space and energy in your day. Because if you get your systems right, there is time for you to do some exercise, to prepare the healthy foods and to do all of those things. Even read a book, you know, take a little bit of time to, I mean, obviously it depends on your work. But yeah, I think the biggest issue is that first step of going, okay, I need to make some change. And it's scary making changes. So, you know, I talk about habits, the habits we have now, and the habits we want to have, but there's a gap in between, that bridge in between. And that bridge can be a little bit difficult to walk across, because that's where things can get a little bit wrong and people get a bit scared and go back to their old way of being.
Let's talk a little bit about those four pillars that you just mentioned. What are they?
Yeah, so the first pillar is healthy eating, which is super important for everyone, particularly mothers who want to lose weight. And you know, I think it's fair to say, well, obviously we want to lose the baby weight, and often the baby weight stays a little bit longer than we want it to. And sometimes, you know, the baby weight sort of comes on and then it never really leaves. So healthy eating is where you're going to actually make those changes to lose that weight. The second pillar is sleep. And sleep is so amazingly important. And we know this. I know that if I don't get enough sleep, I'm like an angry bear. I'm so grumpy. It's unbelievable.
I can relate to that.
My children will tell you sleep is important. But we also have the science to back this up now. And not only is it important for our health, it's important for productivity. And, you know, there's just, it's important for avoiding diseases like Alzheimer's disease is linked to lack of sleep. And we often, the problem with sleep deprivation is that we often don't realize that we're sleep deprived. It isn't something that, you know, you get a sore head. It's just one of those things that you just feel a bit not great the whole day. So sleep is really, really important, although it's obviously difficult with young children. But I feel that a lot of people don't prioritize sleep. So I know that it's difficult when you have young children, especially in those baby times. But you really, once you start prioritizing sleep, things will fall into place. The third pillar is exercise. And contrary to popular belief, this isn't where you shed the pounds. Obviously, exercise helps you lose weight, but it doesn't, it's not the thing to make you lose weight. What I think it is the thing for is to feel fit and fabulous. It's where you get energy and where, you know, moving your body really helps you feel amazing. And, you know, it's a really useful tool for having endorphins and when you're in a grump, for throwing off that grump. So exercise is really integral to our healthy living routine. And the fourth pillar is emotions and mindset. So how we think about things. And this is a really, really big and important pillar. And I feel it's the foundation of the other three, because if you don't pay attention to your mindset, then you can try and make as many changes as you want, but chances are they aren't going to stick. So it is amazing because it sort of sticks everything together. And it's also where you'll find just little pockets of amazingness that you never really thought that you could have. So for example, once you start working on your mindset, you might find that your relationship with your children gets better, or your relationship with your partner, or other things that you're not necessarily working on, but as a side product, things just start to sort of get better in your life.
And I feel like all four of those are, I don't want to say simple, because they can be difficult to achieve, like we were talking about sleep as an example, especially when you have young kids. But it sounds like what you're kind of saying is making small, manageable changes in those four areas can dramatically help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always talk about going back to the basics. I consider my four pillars as the basics. And I look on Facebook groups and people are saying, oh, I feel this. And, you know, you look at the answers and people are saying, oh, you should try vitamin B or vitamin D or try this hormone or that hormone. And I just think, no, until you have sorted out all four of those pillars, you don't need anything else. Those are the four pillars that you really need to pay attention to. And on my podcast, I've had cardiologists and cancer experts and other doctors who talk about this and that, and they all say pretty much the same thing. And it all just comes back to those four pillars. Just pay attention to those four pillars and everything else falls into place.
And it sort of makes sense too, what we began talking about in terms of habits. So you make these simple changes habits, and then you're kind of on your way to a healthier lifestyle, right? In theory, that's the idea.
I mean, there are different ways of doing it. So obviously you can get a coach to help you. And obviously if you need a coach, I'm definitely the coach that you should. but the reality is, I think you can do things more quickly with a coach, and they are going to lead you and teach you, you know, which steps you need to change and sort of do things in bite-sized pieces. I would say be careful of coaches. There are so many health coaches out there. And, you know, I see lots of amazing health coaches, but also I see a lot of people who have, you know, done a 2-week course on I don't know what and consider themselves to be a health coach. So you do have to be a little bit careful with that. But the other way to do it is just to do incremental changes, as you say. So you think, right, I'm going to make sure I get 8 hours sleep. I'm not going to change anything else in my life, but I'm going to make sure I get 8 hours sleep. And I'm going to do this for a month. And when I'm really in that habit, then I'm going to have another little habit. So I'm going to add in some more vegetables at lunchtime or something small like that. And then I'm going to build another habit and another habit. And it feels like almost nothing, but it is the difference from one thing to another. So I am an avid swimmer now. And really my swimming journey started, goodness, 7 or 8 years ago, when I would go to the swimming pool, my kids would have classes, and I did like, I don't know, 45 minutes a week. just doing lengths up and down, probably started with breaststroke and gradually increased the amount of crawl that I was doing. This summer, I have been swimming 2 to 3 kilometers every single day and cycling to the beach.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm so lucky.
Good job.
thank you. But, you know, if I hadn't have made that small change 7 years ago, I wouldn't be where I am now. And I've never pushed myself. It's always just been a natural progression of a small change that I've made, which just feels natural and comes in. But yeah, it's taken 7 years. It's not like I did that in a week. But if you have that goal in sight and you start thinking about that, then you can create healthy habits and just build on them.
I love that. And so often I think we just want instant gratification. So thinking about it, you know, in terms of this is a journey, you know, not a marathon, not a sprint, as they say, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would also say enjoy that marathon, because I don't swim. I mean, I love feeling fit and fabulous, but I don't really swim because I want to keep fit. I really swim because I love it. The water, I've just come back from a swim now and the water is beautiful and there's fish in the water and it's just fabulous. I really enjoy it. So that's why I do it.
I love it. Well, I wanted to switch gears just because I know this is such a hot topic for so many parents, but I wanted to touch on the picky eaters topic, I guess, because so many of us, especially with toddlers, little ones, find ourselves just struggling to get our kids to eat anything other than, you know, pizza and macaroni and cheese or whatever kid, quote unquote, kid food is. So what is your kind of overarching advice to parents that are just struggling with this?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I totally, totally hear your agony because I have been there. I have two.
Can you tell I have some?
So my oldest child is 12 now, and he was my first picky eater. And then his brother, who is now 7 coming up for 8, he was another picky eater. And I have to confess, I never really expected picky eaters, because when I was a kid, I just ate everything and so did everyone in my family. It wasn't a thing that I had. I blame my husband's side of the family. Am I allowed to say that?
Yes, you are.
So I think the first thing is to acknowledge, you know, you're not alone in this. It is something that happens. Picky eating is also, well, let's go back to toddlerhood. I think it is a normal stage in toddlerhood. So what happens to a lot of babies is they really love food. And this happened to my first child. We call it weaning. I think you call it introducing solid foods. And he loved his food to begin with. And he would eat bananas and all kinds of foods. And he had a huge variety. And then it's almost like something happens. And he goes through this stage of just rejecting every food. And now he won't touch a banana at all. So it is something that happens in toddlerhood normally. And out of those children who, you know, go through a picky stage in toddlerhood, some of them it is just a bit of a phase. There's almost like a spectrum of picky eaters. So some people say, oh, my child doesn't like avocados and eggplants. They're a picky eater. Whereas you've got a much more severe end, which is, you know, my child only eats 10 different things. And it actually becomes really difficult to find things that I can feed my child. So I think the best way to explain this is there is a lady called Ellen Satter, and she is a nutritionist, or she might be a dietitian, sorry, I'm not sure. But she came up with this thing called the division of responsibility. And she divides parents' responsibility and children's responsibility. And what she says is that parents are responsible for providing food and, you know, healthy food. I'm talking about healthy food, you know, at regular intervals through the day. So that's your healthy eating schedule, breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, or however it looks for you. And the children are there. Their responsibility is, you know, to be polite and sit politely and to eat what they want to eat. And really the emphasis is on not pressuring your children to eat. Because if you have a picky eater, this is what happens. You know, you say, eat some peas, and they say no. And then you say, oh, you know, it just escalates. Well, you can't have pudding then. And then, you know, you've got this huge, great battle on your hands, which you're not going to win. And also it just creates stress around dinner time. And really what you want to be doing is creating a nice, peaceful time when you can bond and enjoy your food at dinner time. And that doesn't happen by pressuring your kids to eat. As a side note, I would say all children are different, and it's about knowing your child. So with my twins, my daughter is a very adventurous eater and she will eat most things. She also will prefer to eat things like carbohydrates, and I have to remind her at times to take some of the vegetables. But, you know, I couldn't do that with her brother because it would just cause too much anxiety for him. So he also eats vegetables, but I just have a slightly different approach with him. So it is about understanding where your child is. And I think this idea about what foods you provide them is really important as well. So, you know, you want to be providing lots of fruit and vegetables and healthy foods and variety. You want to make sure there's a safe food, that something that they can eat, not their favorite food the whole time. Because if you provide their favorite food, guess what? They're going to eat their favorite food the whole time. But yeah, lots of fruit and vegetables. And I think that most children are what I call carbohydrate junkies. You know, my kids will eat the bread, the pasta, all of those kind of things. So on top of the what foods you're going to provide is also the portion sizes. So a reasonable, appropriate portion size for that child's age. Because if you provide too much of those sweet treats or carbohydrates, they will fill up on that. And that's all they need to eat in 24 hours. They know what their body needs and they can get, you know, as many calories as they need from a packet of cookies. They don't have to eat again in the rest of the day. So you need to make sure your portion sizes are okay. So think about portion sizes of proteins and carbohydrates. And what I say is, when I say carbohydrates, I mean refined, you know, white carbohydrates. So fruit and vegetables, free reign of fruit and vegetables. They can eat as many fruit and vegetables as they want within those eating times. So it's really about taking a step back. And here's a little bit of hard love, I'm afraid, but it's about taking a step back and looking at the foods that you're providing your kids. Because what a lot of people say is, you know, my child will only eat pizza. And the reality is partly because you're allowing your child to have two big portions of pizza, because yes, of course they're going to choose the pizza over the vegetables. But if there's a small portion of pizza and some vegetables, you know what, kids will eat vegetables, even picky children, unless you've got an absolutely extreme picky eater, in which case you should be having some help from a, you know, qualified multidisciplinary team. But other kids will eat fruit and vegetables, you know, as long as they're provided them and feel safe to do that.
And I'm glad that you mentioned portion size. I've talked about that on the podcast before, because that is always eye-opening for me. I know my pediatrician one time told me a portion for them of vegetables or fruits is the size of their fist, not your fist. And so I kind of went, oh, I'm definitely putting way too much broccoli on their plate and then, you know, telling them that they have to eat the whole thing. So I feel like that also can apply to the carbs and the other stuff that you're putting on their plate, not the size of the fist, but just being mindful that you're giving them manageable portions so that they can finish the balanced meal and then ask for more of whatever they like. Yes, the best.
Absolutely. And, yeah, exactly. But the danger really with those big portions is if you give a child a too big portion of broccoli and they only eat half of it, then that's fine. But the reality is we give big portions of ice cream and cake and things like that. And of course they will eat them because it's delicious and who wouldn't? But what we really want to teach them is their own internal limits so that they have a small portion and they say yes. And in fact, Ellen Satter advocates only one portion of dessert. In actual fact, in our house, we only have dessert twice a week. And, you know, there's a difference between a really refined sugar dessert and you can make beautiful, healthy desserts like baked apples or baked peaches that are sort of fruit-based. Now, I used to think about this one portion of dessert, that actually it was a little bit harsh until I saw my children. My mother was there one day and I saw her. I can't remember what the dessert was, but she dished it out and I think she wanted to sort of finish it off. So she gave them these absolutely ginormous portions. And I can't quite remember why I sort of sat there and watched. I think I was just doing an internal experiment to see what would happen. But they had absolutely giant, giant portions and there's no, they won't say no. They will just carry on eating. Whereas if you say no, do you know what? This is an appropriate portion of sweet. And it's perfectly fine to have a small amount of treat, of sweet, but we just have one and that's it. And we don't have any more. And in actual fact, they've done studies. So, you know, it's the same on adults that obviously in the moment we're really enjoying eating whatever it is we're eating. But when we look back on that dessert, it doesn't matter whether you have a small portion or a big portion. You enjoyed it the same. But obviously, in one of them, you ate an awful lot more pudding or dessert than you did in the other one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I feel like adults, that's especially hard because we, you know, especially Americans, we have very large portion sizes and feel like we should finish the whole plate.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Especially in America, you do have large portion sizes. And I haven't been to America very much, but when I was there, I was quite astounded by how big the portion sizes were. But, you know, there are ways around that. For example, putting things on little plates makes it look like a bigger portion. They've done studies about this as well, that if you put the same portion on a big plate and a little plate, on a big plate, it feels like you have less. So if you put things in small plates, it feels like you have a lot more. And going back to children, if it's something new, I would always say give them a small amount because actually they get scared of a big amount. If you give a child a huge, great plate of, well, for them, it might be like wriggly worms. For us, it's, I don't know, something healthy and tasty. And they get scared of it. Whereas if it's just a small portion, a very small amount, a sort of taste, they can get more used to it.
I've noticed that particularly with my kids too. My 5.5-year-old was convinced she hated blueberries. And last night I said, do you want to try a blueberry again? You might like it. And she had me cut one small blueberry in half so she could taste it. And then proclaimed that she now likes blueberries. So, you know, to your point, it was, yeah, and it was probably scary for her to have like, you know, 16 blueberries on her plate where she thought, oh my gosh, I don't like this. You know, I can't try it. There's too many. But I gave her just a little tiny taste and that was okay for her. So.
Fabulous, fabulous. Yes, I think children have this accepted list. I don't think, I know. They have this accepted list. And if something is on the accepted list, then you're fine with it. But a lot of things fall between, okay, I really actually genuinely dislike this and accept it. And what they say is, I don't like it. And what they mean is, I don't know it. I'm a little bit scared of it. So I'm going to say I don't like it. And you just have to run everything through that filter. And it does take time for children to get to know things. They say 15 times. They say a child has to try something 15 times, willingly try something 15 times. Well, you know what? If they're a picky eater, that can take you 5 years because you're not going to force them to eat it. And you every time you say, oh, would you like to try it? And they say no. Then you have to wait for them to actually be willing to do it. And I think that can take a lot of time and a lot of patience. But what you need to do is just open up that accepted list and gradually get more things on that accepted list.
Makes sense. Well, Orlina, tell everybody what you're doing to help other parents and how people can find and connect with you.
Oh, thank you for asking. Well, I have my podcast, which is Fit and Fabulous at 40 and Beyond, which is essentially healthy living for families made easy. And, you know, then I do one-on-one coaching for people who really want to work with someone and transform their life and their family life. And I will soon be having group programs as well. But watch that space because they're not quite ready yet.
Awesome. And I assume people can go to your website to find you.
Yes, my website is drorlena.com. So drorlena.com. And I always have some free gift that, you know, people can sign up for.
Perfect. Well, I will link that on my show notes. And thank you so much for your time and giving us lots of food for thought. No pun intended. Maybe a little pun there. But I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Head over to sweetestandtoughestjob.com. You'll find additional episodes there, as well as information from today's episode, resources, and links. We'd love to connect with you on social media at sweetestandtoughestjob on either Instagram or Facebook. And a special thank you to Makai Pace for all the original music used.